Blog Talk Radio.
I prefer that 2009 work out as well as 2011.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You know, 2010 is not going to be on my high list of things to be happy about this year.
I like November 2nd, 2010.
Oh, yeah, except for one little minor problem.
Huh?
Except for one minor little, well, actually two minor little problems.
And those were?
The agreement that the Republicans said that they would abide by in October,
yeah,
they violated in December.
Yeah, well, welcome to Republicans.
And Obama decided that the best way to get his programs through was to wait until everybody that supports him got shit-canned and wanted to be pissed off little, can I say pricks? Yeah, pissed
sure
off little pricks. And, you know, do everything in a lame duck session.
Ah, yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Somebody else that's doing that, too, right? Right now, this week, another lame duck session of a legislative body right now is giving the president an incredible amount of authority and power. And do you know what country it is?
No. Oh,
Venezuela.
Yeah, Venezuela. Sure.
Yeah, their lame duck session is given, Chavez,
yep,
basically 18 months worth of emergency power rule.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
So,
gosh,
you know,
couldn't have happened to a nicer guy, huh?
You know, so during lame duck sessions, we have two examples of, you know, legislators doing exactly the same thing, giving their president considerably more power than the election would have done so.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely.
You know, I like to be classified, the United States and Venezuela, as, you know, equals in the way that they handle things. You know, it's just this big push by Obama and his agencies and the Democrats, with apparently the Republican acquiescence to do so, to use the lame duck session as a, you know, a way to circumvent November 2nd.
Well,
and
the only thing, yeah, the only one that was bipartisan was that START thing, and frankly, I think that was a mistake, but we'll see. The only other thing that he got through of any substance was Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and that only attracted a couple of Republicans. So it was like,
see, I don't,
okay.
You know, I think it's significant, but certainly not of some substance. You know, in my opinion, it is, you know, and I understand most people will disagree with me about this. It is one of those things that takes issues away from the left. You know, the anti-military left. You know, use Don't Ask, Don't Tell as a huge whipping boy
mm-hmm.
for, you know, how bad the government was behaving, the military was behaving.
Yep.
So the fact that it's been removed is there. I've said to you on numerous occasions that the only people that were using don't ask, don't tell in the military were the people that wanted to get out of the military for whatever
reason.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
Because, you know, they figured they made a bad mistake, they were going to get in trouble, this was the way they got out of it. Or the people that wanted to make some kind of political statement.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, for those two types of people, taking away that way to do things, I think, is a beneficial thing. Now, you know, frankly, do I expect certain gays to do stupid shit in the military and demand certain behavioral changes in the military? Yeah, because there's assholes in every group.
Yeah, there are.
Most people are going to go into the military expecting the military to be, oh, I don't know, military. And
hey,
not
think?
Exactly like, you know, normal culture. And to the extent that I think gays that want to enter the military are going to do so honorably, I think it's a good thing.
Well,
so
we'll find out.
And, of course, it's a blackmail issue that's also been removed. So it's a security issue. In the most unsubstantive way, significant way, but not substantive. Anyways, did we talk about Don't Ask, Don't Tell last week?
Actually,
we
did. We did a little bit, and you opined that you didn't think it was going to pass.
That's right, 2 weeks ago. Yeah, I didn't think it was going to pass. But it did, because some Republicans did cross the aisle.
Absolutely.
Now, the one that I want to bring to the American Conservative Party, the one I want to bring to anybody that's going to start putting together a run for 2012, and pretty much to anybody that's going to argue anything for the next 2 years as far as politics is concerned, is that what are we? What is the United States? Are we a democracy or a republic? And I think this is rather important because I'm really tired of people telling me that the will of the people should rule the day. We are not a democracy.
No, we aren't.
Mob rule is generally just that, mob rule. Okay? So, our founding fathers avoided the idea of a democracy simply because of what we're seeing more and more of. More and more people are not paying federal income taxes, and therefore more and more people are willing to force the government to use their powers to take more and more from the people that do pay federal income taxes.
Yep.
People are finding out that they can demand the government take more, and that taking isn't from them. And so why do they care? I mean, if I can vote for, more money, largesse for me, by telling the government I want tax rates of 70%, and those 70% tax rates don't affect me at all, except for on the receiving end, I don't see any reason why I wouldn't vote for 70% tax rates. That's not what we want. That's not what this country is about. One of the whole argument that got me into third party, into American Conservative Party, is the idea that the United States could vote, by popular edict, slavery back into existence. And that entire concept is abhorrent to me. That, a majority could, place a minority into such a position. It is, there's got to be some way around it. And at this point, I think the constitutional effort, the federalism effort that's undergoing in the Tea Party helps to make that less possible. But prior to those two things, I think we're moving really heavily towards that. And as a matter of fact, in a lot of ways, if you institute a 70 or 80% tax rate on the richest, that's what we've done.
Mm-hmm.
We've reinstituted slavery.
I'm not disagreeing.
It's just, you know, we've taken it from slavery in the sense that they're bodily constrained to slavery in the sense that all their effort is no longer theirs. So I am going to hold some serious arguments to people that tell me, you know, when Republicans or conservatives or Democrats, you know, are no longer paying attention to the public will, you know, my argument is going to be the public will is usually a mob rule, so let's be careful about how often we justify our actions by popularity.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, I
so
agree.
That's the place where I've spent some time thinking the last week. I haven't had a chance to work on the book much this week because I've been doing with client stuff and getting Victoria back home and settled. But it's beginning to look a lot like over the next weekend I'm going to be able to work on the book and such. New
cool.
Year's, start doing some, you know, looking forward into 2011 and seeing what I can get accomplished and do, and, you know, that forward looking. You know, I spent some time looking for our predictions for 2010. Do you remember our predictions for 2010?
Oh, God, no. No, I don't.
You know, I think I've got them somewhere. I just haven't been able to find them. Because I kept most of my notes for most of our shows. So I know it's around somewhere. You know, hopefully the first next week we can talk about them. But I want to let's plan on next week. It will be the 4th of January to have our predictions for 2011. I've been reading a lot of people's predictions for 2011. I'm not agreeing with a whole lot of them, but some of them are rather interesting, including one that I thought was kind of funny. People have been asking, you know, what's going to happen with Hillary? Is she going to run in 2012?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard that one.
Well, here's the prediction, that Biden's going to step down as VP, and Hillary was going to be selected to be VP, and then Biden's going to become Secretary of State.
Ooh. Well, isn't that interesting?
So I
don't know that I put any credence in it, but oh well.
You know, some of the predictions are rather interesting, but, you know, be that as it may. All right, so the question I have is, there's been lots of talking about who the Republican's going to be, and lots of straw polls and a lot of polling going on, and there's no doubt at this point that Palin's the front runner.
Yeah.
But it seems as though, for whatever reason, that Huckabee is getting more and more of the elites and the Republicans behind him, and I don't understand that at all.
I'm not sure I understand that one either. I mean, it is not intuitive that would be the case.
Unless they're intending simply to undercut Palin.
Well, I suppose. The other thing that you hear is that, that the entry into the race only benefits Gingrich, and I thought, well, isn't that interesting? And we'll see how that works. Apparently the thinking is that that if that happens, then because it's a crowded field, that gives Gingrich a leg up. Now,
I don't see Gingrich as having more than single-digit popularity under any set of circumstances.
Oh, I agree. I'm not I'm not saying he does. All I'm saying is I have heard somebody advance that theory, and regardless of whether I agree with it or not, is kind of like, well, okay, maybe so.
Huckabee simply gets the SoCon vote. He certainly doesn't get the fiscal conservative vote.
No, he doesn't.
And I don't see him getting the security vote. He's got no gravitas as far as that's concerned, in my opinion. I haven't paid a whole lot of attention to him on Fox, so I don't know what he's been saying about, security stuff like that. But I think his entire base is in the SoCon side, so that's, right now we have much bigger problems with security and finances than we do with SoCon.
Oh, yeah.
The only real significant, what issues can we have, in the social conservative movement that are likely to create any particular movement? Gay marriage is going to work its way through the courts. Everyone seems to be waiting for the ninth to kick it up to the Supreme Court, so that's going to take the next year and a half.
Yeah.
So nothing in gay marriage is on the horizon for a while. Somebody has suggested that Obama is going to take on DOMA over the next year, which I think is laughable, considering that he supports it, has been on record as supporting it, so that's going to happen. There's no desire by just about anyone in the Republican or the Democratic Party to bring it up or deal with it, so that's not going to change. That's not going to be there. So that takes marriage out of the issue. Don't Ask, Don't Tell takes gays out of the military out of that issue. That leaves abortion as the only other real big social conservative thing. And that's only going to be if Obama gets more Supreme Court justices to announce.
Yeah.
And I think the next one that's going out, from what I understand, is Souter. No, not Souter.
Stevens.
Stevens, that's it. I knew it was one of the S's.
Yep.
That's not going to change the court at all.
No.
So, I don't see the court being a big shift there. I don't see any social conservative issues being prominent in 2012 unless something dramatically changes over the next year and a half. I just don't see it. So the only one that Huckabee can hurt is Palin. And she hasn't run on any social conservative issues at all.
No.
She hasn't brought up any social conservative issues. She hasn't made any stands on social conservative issues. She has stayed on task, which is fiscal and security issues. Huckabee just doesn't make any sense to me. Romney is dead in the water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As long as Obamacare is sitting there, anybody's going to be able to wrap, Romney care around his neck. So.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, he's
as long as Obamacare is sitting out there and that fight is going to go on. Mitt has nothing, to be able to deal with.
I agree.
Gingrich has been there. There's, he's like Buchanan.
Yeah.
He's like,
very good.
I mean, I liked Buchanan a long, long time ago. Till both the isolationist and the anti-Semitism came up. But so prior to that, he had some pretty, I think he had some qualifications. I think he just went a little bit insane. Gingrich, I think, is just walking along the same path. I think he's walking in the same group of people Yeah, what's that party with no labels?
Yeah, the no label party.
Kind of what I'm thinking about when I think of Gingrich and Buchanan. They really deserve that party. So, you know, the question is, if Palin is a front runner, who would she pick as a running mate?
Don't know. It's an interesting question. And I suspect that it's one that until she actually does it, we aren't going to have an answer to that. You know?
And then the question is how comparative is, you know, how likely is a Palin run against, well, the reason I brought up the Hillary becoming VP with Obama is the idea behind it is that it would undercut a Palin run for the presidency. And I think, you know, you listen to Hill Buzz, you read Hill Buzz.
Oh, I read them. You betcha. Every day.
And the whole premise of Hill Buzz was originally to support Hillary. You know, the question I have is, I think if Hillary became a VP, they would be pissed off. Because that absolutely, you know, undercuts her, although the person that made the presentation suggested that it would make Hillary viable for 2012. I don't see that at all. Obviously, it would make her much more viable for 2016. But, you know, does a Hillary on the ticket as a VP, you know, eliminate any crossovers to have Palin as president, you know, in 2012? You know, how many people who voted for Obama just because he was black, including a fair number of Republicans and independents, simply because they wanted to say we voted for the first black president, despite Bill Clinton's claim to that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For all of his facts.
Many would actually vote for Palin as the first woman president to say that they had done so there. You know, the question would be how many liberal women would vote against Palin because they don't like her versus how many would vote for her simply to be voting for the first woman president. Would she pick up a couple percentage points simply because of that? I don't know.
Yeah, that gets way too far down in the weeds for me.
Maybe that's true. Are so anti-Palin, you know, for reasons that I still don't understand.
Because the left did such a great Alinsky job on her during the McCain-Palin run. I mean, people's real, actual, living, human being, breathing people still think Palin said, "I can see Alaska from my house." I mean, they believe that she said that. Wasn't her, it was Tina Fey impersonating her, but it doesn't matter. They've got that in their mind. I mean, all of these things, I mean, the whole banning books things, the whole, I mean, it's just, they did a number on her, and frankly, I don't know if she's going to recover. I will support her, I will work for her, but I don't know that she's going to recover. So,
I don't see anybody. You know, people have talked about Pence. People have talked about Pullen. I don't see any of them as, you know, viable candidates. I just don't. At this point, it's Palin, and I don't see anybody else in double digits. I really don't.
Well, no, I mean, you know, if depending on the state that you pull them in, Huckabee is right up there. The latest poll out of Florida showed Mittens losing 23 points, but you know who picked him up? Gingrich. Mittens lost 23 points. Gingrich polled 22. It's a mystery to me, you know.
I think you and I are going to have exactly the same problem. You know, if any of them start polling, you know, considerably better than Palin going into September this year, both of us are just going to simply shake our heads and go,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Welcome to Obama's second term.
Exactly. You know, and you know, before I would vote for and also ran, I'd sit that out. Say, okay, I'm, you know, if that's what you folks want, okay, you got it. There it is. Go ahead.
Nobody besides Palin at this point am I willing to vote for.
Yep. Now, could that change for me? Yep, absolutely. But they're going to have to show me.
I don't know if I trust them.
Well, yeah.
You know,
We have a year of legislative accomplishments to go here. And I'm willing to look around and say, okay, who's stepping up to the plate? Who's walking the walk? Not just saying nice things, but who's actually walking the walk? And then seeing how they stack up. Now, if nobody steps up, nobody is going to walk the walk, then okay. You know, I'm back to my default choice, which is Palin. And we'll see how that goes.
Well, let's move off from politics. We'll
okay.
come back to it in a little while, maybe.
Yep.
I'm going to spend some time with economics.
A subject near and dear to both of our hearts.
Some of the things that are going on is a Chinese bubble. You, I think, probably have been paying attention to it. Maybe other people have not been paying attention to it. The Chinese have literally built cities in the last 7 or 8 years.
Yep.
That they don't need. Their inflation is now at 5%. And they're talking about starting to tighten down some of the screws.
Mm-hmm.
Is significant liquidity problems going on in China?
Yes.
Did you hear about their latest bond sale the other day?
China's? No.
It failed.
Ow.
They were only trying to raise about $6 billion and only got about $3 billion in bids. That's a pretty small offering. It was big for them. It was 20 billion yuan. But it failed. And that's the second one in a row that they didn't have enough bidders, you know, to sell it out. The question is this a liquidity problem or just a end of year problem? That's the question that is being asked. If it's the beginning of the liquidity problem, you know, this could be, you know, where China begins its adjustment. You know, I said it a couple of weeks ago that no matter how much you complain about the U.S. dollar, you know, give me the name of another currency or basket of currencies you'd want to use to replace it.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly,
exactly.
It just doesn't exist.
Nope. Sure doesn't.
So the question is, you know, what happens if Chinese bubble bursts? But frankly, I think if the Chinese bubble bursts, it doesn't have any real significant impact on us at all. I think it might put a little bit of pressure on the dollar, but I don't see it having any big impact on us, other than it will have a tendency to undercut some of the naysayers. Do you remember back in the 80s when Japan was everybody was looking at Japan's GDP
yep.
and saying, pretty
yep.
soon it's going to overtake the United States GDP and Japan
yep.
is going to be the powerhouse. Look at all the things that they're doing right.
Yep. Exactly.
You know, and, then,
and they were buying up all of the real estate and the movie houses and all that kind of stuff. Yep. Yep. Yep.
Yeah, and then China just imploded.
Yep.
So, you know, the question is, there's no good indication that China has the systemic ability to avoid stupidity. BuzzZero is right. The Chinese are printing, you know, Chinese money faster than Bernanke is.
U.S. dollars, is that right? Yeah.
I think both of them are running it pretty close, you know, relative speaking, size-wise. I think they're running them pretty close. You know, Bernanke is increasing the debt loads, you know, not so much the currency. You know, China's absolutely increasing the currency issue. I think China's actual inflation rate is probably at least twice the reported rate. That's going to come crashing down.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, you know, somebody told me that the last 80 years have repudiated all of the anti-government rhetoric that we are a part of. And I'm sitting there going, you know, and the link they put me to was the anniversary of Social Security, and I'm sitting there going, you actually want to use Social Security as a evidence of how well the social welfare system is working?
They want to use the biggest Ponzi scheme ever as evidence of that? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Fine.
And you got
Ponzi was a piker compared to the U.S. government.
Oh, yeah. The I'm going to jump over and go into it. In Illinois, the governor of Illinois has suggested borrowing $15 billion in order to balance the $13 billion hole they have in the budget this year.
Oh, God. Let's see. We're going to borrow our way out of debt, huh? Is that what we're saying here?
Well, what's rather interesting about it is that he's not offering any spending cuts.
Mm-hmm.
Additional taxes to pay for the $15 billion. And the $15 billion is not, there's no capital money in this. It's all operating money.
Okay.
You know, so they're borrowing $15 billion to buy groceries. You know, figuratively speaking. And that's what it is. It's just a frickin' Ponzi scheme.
God. Well, that's kind of like what California's doing.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
It's a solvency problem, people. Let's solve it with a liquidity issue.
There you go.
I don't know what to say. We're going to get back to some more of there. I want to diverge here a little bit. I think I've become a birther.
Oh, really? You and Chris Matthews, huh?
Well, you know, I did read what we said, and I read a bunch of comments about it and stuff like that. And my only issue is exactly the same one is, you know, why not just release it? You know, because it shuts down all of it.
Yeah, there you go.
Know, if you release it. And the question was, what is, you know, nobody, I don't believe, one, his mother was an American citizen. So I don't care where he was born, that makes him an American citizen.
Yep.
So that's, you know, whether he was born in Kenya or Hawaii or anywhere, it doesn't make any difference. He was born to American citizens, you know, so he's an American citizen. So that's neither here nor there. The question is, what information is on that birth certificate that he feels, you know, too scared to produce? And the question is, of course, that the religion is going to be indicated that he's going to be Muslim. And then somebody else said, you know, that he's going to be put down, that his race is going to be Caucasian.
Okay.
Now, frankly, both of those create problems for Obama and popcorn moments for everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't make any difference to me whether he was his religion at birth was Muslim or if his race was Caucasian, it doesn't make any difference to me one way or the other. But I think the left would go batshit crazy.
Yeah.
On either case.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah,
not so much on the Muslim. Maybe there'll be a whole lot of people on the left that, you know, actually cheer him at that point. But there'll be a whole lot more people on the right that go,
Yeah.
And, you know, the question, you know, I'm not really serious about the birth of, but I am serious about this fact. You know, Obama has kept almost all of his records under wraps.
Yes, he has.
And I think
one
that's
wonders why.
A bad precedent.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't care what the why is. Frankly, I think it's
actually,
a bad
you know, I kind of do, but that's just me.
You know, I think it's a bad precedent. I think, you know, I think when you're going to run for the most powerful position on the planet, we have a right to see the same records that everyone else has been producing. Financial, school, medical, you know, especially school records, especially given the fact that, you know, you're running on no particular experience record. You know, if you're running on an intelligence record, then, you know, you're going to want to see something from school, you know, or writing history. And biographies, frankly, are not, in my opinion, you know, good experience, you know, indicators of the intelligence portion. So, you know, that's where my problem is. And that's kind of, I think, what Matthews was trying to say, is that, you know, you release these, you know, you release the records, just get them out there, it shuts up most of the people, and we go back to don't ask, don't tell. You know, I'm much more interested in shutting up people, shutting up issues, than I am in, you know, creating stupid diversions. You know, because frankly, don't ask, don't tell was a diversion.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree with that at all.
You know, that let the Republicans get away with, you know, approving, you know, stimulus toto.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, START was done. You know, too many people were looking at don't ask, don't tell as the big issue when it was, as I suggested, significant but of no substance. So, you know, that's kind of my concern at this point. I want the problem to go away, and he can make it go away fairly easily if he'll just simply do that. I don't expect him to do that because there's likely to be something in there that he doesn't want to have to answer to.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's Caucasian. I actually think it's Muslim.
Probably. Yep.
Which is stupid because it would have gotten him 2 more percentage points on the election, you know, for people to say the first black Muslim president.
Yeah.
You know, prove that we're not anti-Muslim in this country by
there
voting for a Muslim president.
Yeah.
You know.
Exactly.
I think he
can spin it positively, but you know. What's Buzz Zero saying? The issue is actually the natural born part. I don't know.
What do you mean by the issue is natural born?
Yeah. As opposed to an American citizen by birth.
Well, you know,
we'll see.
McCain wasn't, by that definition, natural born. You know, he was born to American citizen parents.
He was born on a base in Panama?
I think the question was that he was born off base.
Oh, really?
I don't recall.
I hadn't realized that.
That
would have been odd back then. I mean, almost all of those births occurred on base, but, you know, maybe not in his part.
Well, if I had been born 2 months earlier, I would have been born on, is it Bergenstock? No, not Rammstein. I would have been born on one of the German army bases in, you know, if I had been born 2 months earlier.
Huh.
you know, as it was, I was born here. My mother came here 2 months before I was born, so I was born here. But my parents were not citizens at the time. They became citizens after the fact. In any case, I noticed, and I want to bring this up again in the context of the economy, oil is beginning to approach $100 a barrel again.
Again. Yes, it is.
Again. Somebody suggested that oil is going to go down to $10 or $20 a barrel by mid-2011. Frankly, I thought they were idiots. I don't expect that.
Yeah.
Not with the drilling moratorium still going on. I just don't see it. I see the Middle East getting worse, not better. That's going to create problems there. So I don't see any reason for oil to come down. I don't think anybody's paying a whole lot of attention. We've all gotten used to $3 a gallon gas. $3 is not going to be an issue. Somebody's talking about $5 a gallon by summer. I'm not impressed by our economic recovery that we've had so far this quarter. I think you may have seen the big little argument that I had with somebody who told me that the auto industry had been making a great comeback this year.
I didn't see that. Where was that?
It was on Twitter. It was over the weekend. Somebody said, you know, the auto industry is coming back because of cash for clunkers. And I'm sitting there going, okay, we're 2 million units below 2008.
Yeah.
And 4 million units behind 2007. So I don't see how there was any.
So where's this comeback here, huh?
Where's that, yeah, this comeback coming on? And then what could only be suggested, there was two things additional suggested. One, that cash for clunkers got a whole bunch of, you know, beat up cars off the road. And I'm thinking, okay, so I asked, well, why don't we then just destroy a million homes? That way, you know, we can, you know, improve the housing market. Then they said something, it's the important thing was not to look at the number of units built, but look at the profitability.
Okay.
And I'm sitting there going, from a greed point of view, profitability is, you know, certainly what I'd be interested in. If I was the owner of the company and was going to benefit from profitability, I'd certainly be looking at profitability. But if I was looking at the economy, and noted that we're building 2 or 4 million fewer cars a year than we were before, that suggests that we don't need a whole lot of employees and additional businesses to support as many cars as being built. And I said, I don't know about you, but I would certainly want to have 2,500 cars built, each making $10 profit, net profit, than one Hummer built with $25,000 profit.
Yes.
I mean, if you're interested in the economy, the 2,500 cars being built and sold at $10 profit is certainly much better indicator than one Hummer at $25,000.
Yeah.
There was no response to that. No response to that. Buzz Zero doesn't make any difference. As long as one parent is a citizen, the child is a citizen. Both parents do not have to be citizens. So, you know, the idea that cash for clunkers did anything, and then, of course, we got into the argument about, you know, the bankruptcy and her comment was, well, the bondholders got lots of equity for their bonds. And I'm going like, you know, I don't think you have bettered anybody by taking away their title to a house but letting them stay there as tenants.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't find that to be an improvement of any kind. And, you know, the original equity holders were wiped out in the bankruptcy. So were the bondholders, for all practical purposes.
Yes.
And all of that was exactly against the law as far as bankruptcy is concerned.
Yes, it is.
Which, I've got to say this, and I don't understand this, because it doesn't make any sense to me. A whole lot of people significant things have been happening over the course of this last year that people are just kind of going, yeah, okay, next. I mean, they're not paying any attention to. The bankruptcy of GM, in the bankruptcy circles, just scared the bejesus out of people. The GM bankruptcy was just, it violated virtually every tenet of bankruptcy law.
Yep.
And the fact that it got through the courts and nobody, shoved it up out of the bankruptcy courts, is just frankly scary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it just absolutely subverted bankruptcy law in its entirety. The missile launch off of the coast of Southern California.
Oh, man. Yeah. God, that heated up there a while back here, huh?
That was really big news for about 4 days, and then it just disappeared off the radar.
Yep.
And
but then it came back.
It did? I ain't seen it.
Came back on Twitter with various people opining, including retired military types, that, yep, that sure, yes, indeed, he was, too, in a missile. So, I don't know. I'm thinking it was just because of what I saw, but what do I know? I'm just an old broke-down man.
Hey. Formerly an Air Force air traffic controller, I can tell you it wasn't a contrail.
No.
There was no doubt that was a missile launch.
Yep.
Oh, and what does it mean when our military denies that it launched a missile?
Well, and there's I guess, a couple of schools of thought on that. One is, yes, indeed, it was ours, and no, we aren't going to tell you anything about it. And two, it was somebody else's, we don't know who, and we're shitting our pants and don't know what to do. So we still aren't going to tell you about it. I mean, we got lots of potential culprits. China, Russia, North Korea. I don't put a lot of credence in North Korea, but, China and Russia, sure. And all of those have diesel electric subs that are capable of doing that.
Well, the question would be, if we launched a missile, the question would be why?
Well, yeah.
And there's no, I have two answers to that. A boat launched its missile without authorization.
God, that's hard to do, but yeah, okay.
Scary and hard to do.
Yeah.
Or it did, but it did so for some, to do something against somebody else, but they don't want to say what that somebody else was.
And because of the total blackout, we have no idea where it landed, which could give
right.
us a clue as to what the message might
be. Contrail doesn't tell us enough to be able to, just because it goes in a specific direction doesn't necessarily mean it stays going in that direction.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep.
So, scary.
Yep.
There's shit going on, and no one's paying a whole lot of attention to it. You and I made a big deal about the fact that we've had a significant amount of derivatives outstanding in 2008. Sorry about that.
Yep.
In 2008, that we had a significant amount of derivatives
yes.
still outstanding.
Yes, yes.
To the tune of $100 trillion.
Yep.
I haven't been able to find a whole lot of anything, but what I have found is that in late 2009, the number was still standing at just under $400
trillion.
So we're not seeing a big change there. You know, people worry about having 10,000 missiles and we can blow up the planet 16 times over. You know, nobody's paying a whole lot of attention that we've got $400 trillion worth of derivatives that can blow up the economies of the world 50 times over.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, given how people are not prepared for any kind of a financial setback, one is just about as bad as the other. Now, not quite, because people just quit paying and they stay where they are and they start doing subsistence stuff if they can and that kind of thing. But it's still scary stuff.
I'm concerned that a whole lot of big issues have just been, you know, shoved underneath the carpet. One of them is going to come back and bite us.
Someplace, sometime, somewhere. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, because they're still there. I mean, it isn't like, oh yeah, we solved all those problems, so now we can move on to these other lesser things. It's like, well, let's go on to these other lesser things and maybe folks will forget about the bigger problems that are out there.
I have asked over the weekend for somebody to show me some indication that Obama has some kind of intelligence.
Yeah, good luck.
Competency to handle things, and I'm not seeing any.
Nope.
I'm not seeing any desire, to create it. People that I would be expecting to push Obama to doing things are not, and that either means they know he can't, and therefore are not willing to push the issue, or are ducking their own heads in the sand, hoping that nothing bad happens in the next 2 years.
Well,
I don't know. I don't expect Obama to be able to handle a big crisis.
No.
He hasn't shown any particular capacity to do so far.
Yeah, no, I agree. There is no indication that either he or his advisors have a clue as to what's happening. And you know, if that is the case, then folks, we're in deeper trouble than anybody thought.
Oh, I'm thinking we're in deep trouble.
Well, yeah.
Somebody said, there's lots of people talking about letting the Democrats have their way and showing everybody how naturally they're bad about doing everything. Well, congratulations. We've proven that they're really bad at doing everything.
Yep.
So now what?
Yeah, exactly. And we don't know. I mean, and that may be the scariest part of it. We simply don't know what his reactions are going to be. If any.
We can solve the economy. I don't care how bad the economy gets. We can solve the economy.
Yep. Absolutely.
That's not worrying me at all. So, we can't solve somebody throwing a missile over Nevada and exploding it at 120 miles.
Nope. That's a tough one.
So, we can't solve, the big one hitting California.
No.
We can't solve, Tehran nuking Tel Aviv.
Nope.
And frankly, I don't expect Obama to do anything other than send Hillary to Tel Aviv.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they are my, isn't this a mess?
Yep. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Go ahead.
I was just going to observe that I thought it was interesting that Bill Richardson, almost ex-governor of New Mexico, went to North Korea in that latest round back in, what was it, October, November, kind of lends a little credence to the idea that, gosh, maybe Hillary's going to step down, and lo and behold, here's Richardson.
Well,
as secretary.
Hillary hasn't made a mess of foreign policy. But then I think about how little that she's actually done in foreign policy.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, there's no negotiations going on, six-party talks in Asia. There's no talks going on with Israel and the Palestinians. There's nothing new going on with Iran, except for they're continuing their little good sets. You know, I'm not seeing anything on foreign policy that Obama was supposedly able to fix, you know, once we get rid of the cowboy image that has in fact been fixed. Improved, managed, maintained. If anything, all of it's gotten worse.
You know, the only thing that he's actually done foreign policy-wise is the START Treaty.
Which
and that's
absolutely
all
screws Eastern Europe.
Oh, yeah. Well, and us. I mean, if you stop and think about this, this was a bilateral treaty, Russia and the United States. Now, who does that leave out? Leaves out China, leaves out Iran, leaves out North Korea, leaves out all of those entities that, with the exception of China, probably don't have a lot of inhibitions to putting nuclear material into the hands of terrorists. And there is absolutely nothing in that other than, according to the Russians, a prohibition on missile defense. Now, that does not strike me as being a treaty that is much in the self-interest of the United States.
Well, here's why, in the big scheme of things, I'm not too worried by START. Russia has all the capability of being, a world nuclear power, the same way Pakistan does.
Okay.
So, they got nukes and. Yeah, they can create a whole lot of local, regional havoc. But frankly, I would wager money, a lot of money, that if Russia attempted to launch a ballistic missile at this point, they would successfully nuke their own missile silo.
Don't have a lot of confidence in their competence, huh?
No confidence in their competence at all. In the sense that the START creates a problem for us. Ballistic, I don't see the problem. I see the problem much more to be an issue for Eastern Europe and Asia than it is for us.
Well, but what
I think was a really bad idea, I don't think it's ultimately real harmful to us specifically. We got about 40 seconds, dude. Say your shout-out.
Okay, well, just me, Pammy, Buzz Zero, Arkansas Traveler, Mama Gurkha, Louisa Ma, thanks for listening in. Appreciate that very much. We live to serve.
And maybe only for another month.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe only for another month. William, Happy New Year.
Tracy, Happy New Year to you too.
Monitoring and see if I can fix that.
Okay.
You know, so we can have that a little bit more for next week. In the meantime, I want you to work on your your predictions.
I'll work
on mine.
Okay.
And you know, then we need to talk next week with the audience about where we're going to go with this.
Yeah.
You know, whether we're
going to
start winding it down or whether we're going to, you know, upgrade. We're going to need to get support if we're going to upgrade.
Yep, we are. That's
so,
absolutely true.
And I want to talk to Butch about moving over to their little network. They have 8 hours of broadcasting time that they want to fill.
Really?
Yeah, so it depends on what you want to do. So let's talk to our respective spouses, and I want to talk to you over the new year.
Okay.
Weekend, let's have a conversation about it.
Yeah, sure.
To everyone else, have a happy new year. Be safe. We're going to have a quiet one here, I think. And I'm going to cut out and do a little relaxing tonight. William,
cool.
Thank you.
All righty, thank you.
We'll talk. Everyone else, have a good New Year's. Behave yourself.
Everybody. You betcha. We done?
Thank you, Bill.
All righty. Bye-bye.